All right, welcome, Left Reckoners. This is Matt Leck. With me, as always, David Griscom.
How's it going, man?
It's going well. I am excited to end our week this way.
Me too.
As I post on Twitter, this is one of the most astounding pieces of cable television that I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's one that I was late to. You know, I did a huge Hitchens, not only YouTube archive and C-SPAN archive, but also like listed all his podcast appearance. So I was a bit of a Hitchens completionist around like 2008, 9-ish time. That's when I was getting also into like kind of new atheism, that sort of thing. And this escaped my attention entirely. And I can't believe it, because as David said, like this is like a classic. This is absolute stone cold classic. And it's not only Hitchens that's amazing here. There's also some prime Whoopi Goldberg content. There is some classic Dennis Prager. You'd see him be the same old stick in the mud that he. And I mean, look, he doesn't look great now, but he didn't look much different. Like,
I wouldn't want to say that he's like ageless, but yeah, he's definitely doing something that's like sort of locked him in like the 70-year-old man body for 40 years now.
Like, you know those pictures like where it's like, this is a McDonald's hamburger, and it's like 3 weeks later, it's the exact same. Like, that's what Dennis Prager is.
He started drinking child's blood, but he did a little bit too late, you know, to lock in the youth.
Yeah. It's like, damn it. This doesn't make you go backwards. It just locks you in place. So some Dennis Prager justifying, anti-communist aggression. Bill Maher. A lot of people are wondering, like, what happened to Bill Maher? Bill Maher has always been this.
Yes.
There's a certain way, like, you know, Bush, I think, made a lot of people look more radical than they actually were. And so here we get to see the anti-communist Bill Maher. And last but not least, Gene Simmons of KISS playing the role of the dumb liberal who sides with fascism and doesn't realize that's what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really great. Hitchens, to me, is, we've talked a little bit about this with Ben, but I think like I was getting into this Hitchens phase around the time that I was assigned the German ideology in college, and so being exposed to it in school, but also having a model out there to be like, I went through Marxism, mm-hmm. and it taught me how to think about stuff. And it's funny, Ben said that, I think, Letters to a Young Contrarian was when Hitchens foisted Marxism in this to a certain degree. And that's funny to me because I need to go back and read that, because that's one of the first ebooks I ever bought. Wow. And I think to me that the message to me wasn't that like Marxism was that he foisted it, which is clearly what he said he did, but that he had been a Marxist at one point. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, well, damn, like this atheism stuff is cool, but it doesn't explain a whole lot of the world. And like, there's a certain way these new atheists, they talk about, you know, flim flam and like pseudoscience and stuff like that. And that's cool. But Hitchens can talk about politics and history. Mm. And so I am excited to read Ben's book to kind of rehearse some of that time period, because Hitchens was I find it like he was on The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, a lot of those types of shows, those podcasts. Mm. And like he bridged that sort of new atheism to Marxism ideology bubble for me, actually.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, while we're just sharing kitchen stories, you know, real quick, it's like, similar kind of path for me. Like, I was a huge, you know, me and my friends, we'd call them Hitch slapping and watch, you know, Hitchens compilation videos or, you know, debates. Yeah. And, you know, it started mainly with the atheism stuff, but, you know, very quickly, especially as I was becoming more and more of a socialist, I liked my Hitchens much younger.
Yes.
And, you know, finding some of these older videos was always a treat. So, I mean, I haven't seen this in a long time. I haven't sat through and watched it all the way through, so I'm looking forward to it. But, I mean, if anything, what was sort of fun about this era of Hitchens, and this is sort of like later, like it was this like 90s or so.
Yeah, well, this is sort of a 5 or so months before 9/11.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, so even later.
Yeah.
You know, so this is as he's starting to just sort of flirt and start to turn his back on a lot of lefties. or socialists in general. Watching some of these older videos, especially like the anti-war, anti-imperialist kind of sentiment, was like very influential, at least in sort of beginning, anti-imperialist, education for me. So yeah, these are fun as hell, as hell to watch. And Hitchens also is he knows how to speak and he knows how to sort of rile up an audience, and he does a great job in this video. So should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
I skipped ahead a little bit, y'all, just because I don't feel like watching like this super old vintage like Bill Maher thing for a whole like 2 minutes, because we got a little while to go. But we'll start around here.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, Whoopi Goldberg gets them so fucking mad here.
Yeah.
I haven't forgotten about the old Jew. All right, her new movie is Kingdom Come, and her kingdom is
hot. You know, we should just play the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
Let's just edit it like that, if that's not too difficult to do.
Sure.
I don't know. Because Bill Maher says something ridiculous right there about Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
Correct. Bill Maher.
I think it kind of sets the scene a little bit.
Let us meet our panel. He's a best-selling author and a nationally syndicated radio talk show host out of KRLA right here in Los Angeles, Dennis Prager. Dennis, where are you? Dennis, again. Thank you for coming. He is a celebrated journalist, magazine editor, and the author of the book, The Trial of Henry Kissinger. Christopher Hitchens, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. H.
Was another room.
That's water in his room.
I think he'll light a cigarette soon.
He is a movie and TV producer and the silver-tongued frontman of the number one tour band in the world from Kiss, Gene Simmons. Gene, you're an attractive and powerful man.
Yeah, Gene still got it.
I haven't forgotten about the old Jew. All right, her new movie is Kingdom Come, and her kingdom is Hollywood Squares. Whoopi Goldberg. Hello, darling. Okay.
Yeah, this start is just bizarre.
What a night. What a panel. What a show. Okay. I wish we could just lollygag here, but we have important issues to get to. Your book, Chris, always, you are one of the great writers, I have to say. I don't agree with everything in here.
You're not supposed to.
Or anything.
Right. It's about Henry Kissinger, and, you're not the first to say that he is responsible for a lot of the atrocities in Indochina. And, of course, with the Bob Kerry situation all in the news, I've been hearing nothing but Vietnam the last couple of weeks. And I have to tell you, it bothers me that there is this conventional wisdom that is in every article I hear, every article I read, every news report I hear about Vietnam was a wasted war. We should never have gone. I have said many times on the show, I thought it was a necessary war. You know, it was very nice for Ronald Reagan, an actor playing the president, to go over to the Berlin Wall and say, tear down that wall. That is not what won the Cold War. That was a wonderful money shot.
It's true.
What it was a good photo op. What won the Cold War was demonstrating to the bullies of the world that we would put ourselves on the line and spend lives. The Vietnam War didn't have to happen in Vietnam, but it had to happen somewhere.
I think the problem.
Because Hitchens is about to respond to this very well, but I mean, I just, it must be said that, Bill Maher did not make some kind of 180 recently. You know, a lot of people come back like Bill Maher, turned to the right later in his life. I mean, this is one of the most extremely reactionary statements that you can make. Not only saying that the Vietnam War, which was essentially, one of like the worst genocides of like the 20th century, was just, but saying so in a way where it doesn't even matter that where it happened or who it happened to. It just shows how much of like how he can abstract human life and value of human life. and two, just how ideological, like, he views the world completely separate from, you know, like, actual material reality or political reality. It's like, we needed to make a statement, right? And make a show.
Yeah. The entire, it wasn't for anything to do with the people of Vietnam. It was to send a message to a different world power. And it's like, it's a necessary war, but it didn't necessarily have to be in Vietnam. Could have been fucking anywhere, but we needed to necessarily have it somewhere. They're just psychopathic. And like, this is like, I think it's interesting to know. And like when I saw Ben on This Is Revolution with Pascal, and Pascal was talking about like seeing Hitchens in the 90s talking about Clinton. And it's just interesting to know how fucking reactionary cable news was. Like, yeah. He's like and how much, like, thank God. I mean, this is, well, I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but I'm worried about you know, ultimate like crackdown, because this is what they prefer. This is what, like, powerful people would prefer discourse to be, is just this sort of thing where the premise is that we had to go in and do that, and now like it's on Whoopi Goldberg and the British lefty to try to like defend that position from Gene Simmons and PragerU and the host of the show.
And let's also not forget that, like, again, Bill Maher is supposed to be, you know, presenting himself as like one of the most liberal guys in the country. And like, the what people mean by that is he wants to score points for like the Democrats, right? Yes. Like the content there is he's saying like, oh, well, Reagan's not the real winner. Like, right. it was you know, it was the Democrats beforehand who, like, you know, instituted this brutal war. So just keep that in mind.
Right, exactly.
I'm sorry to interject. I think the problem...
I'm sorry again.
I saw the breath, the respectful breath. But what I was going to say was, I think there's a problem with media. Media basically warps all things.
Sound familiar?
I believe that media polarized America. I was in college at that point. And so there was this kind of ranting and raving back and forth between the far left and the far right. Is this a politically motivated war? Right. Is it a military? Who cares? The idea is, pragmatically speaking, when are you going to stop the guy with the hammer and the sickle when he's knocking on your door?
Right.
However, let's be pragmatic about this. I mean, and real.
How about you stop the guy with the hammer and the sickle on his face when he's knocking at your door? When he's knocking at your door?
Yeah, what door are you talking about? Did Gene Simmons have a house in Hanoi? Right. I mean, it's so, yeah.
God.
America didn't just enter the war because we were the good guys. There were other issues. There was oil and all that stuff. But I do agree with the right, although I don't perceive myself as that, with you've got to stamp your foot down.
Yeah. Yes, it's always...
On whom?
Terrible to think.
On whom? On who is this put to be stamped down? You say lives had to be lost to prove your point, our point. Well, just take the case of Senator Kerry. That's 13... old ladies and women and children, do their lives have to be lost to make this point that the United States should
be? The Russians...
No, I don't think so.
The Russians...
By 1968, Robert McNamara and Lyndon Johnson and all the people running the war had all said to their friends at the Senate and to their friends at the CIA and the FBI, this war is over, it's lost, we should never have got into it. But we can't break that news to the American people yet.
Right.
Now, how does that going to sound to people whose sons were lost in Vietnam after the war had been given up on by the political class?
Those are legitimate questions.
They are, but Bill
it's
asked.
Nice of you to say so, but that's
well, but I haven't got my
transcript yet. I love that. We can run that back because I talked over it. But when Prager tries to come in and Hitchens just fucking bitch slaps him, like, oh, sorry,
he bitch slaps him, and like, don't let that point be lost either. That's a very I don't know. I don't know if you've read the Trial of Henry Kissinger.
Yes,
but it's a very powerful like opening that he has, where he goes to the Vietnam Memorial and he goes and he finds all the soldiers' names and all the people who died on the U.S. side after they had sort of decided, you know, that the war was unwinnable and, you know, but they had to continue doing it for appearances, like for the fucking Gene Simmons and like the Bill Maher's of the world. And I think that that's, you know, obviously the tragedy is much more what happened to the Vietnamese people. Don't get me wrong here. But yeah, the point is like, think about all of those people who died to make a kind of symbolic political point. You know, that should be the message that we're giving to the family, those families who are, you know, grieving, is that this was done to you by your political class.
Yep.
But yeah, this is a great little spin that he does. And I also think it's good not to let people talk. That's one thing that you learn from Hitchens, is like, you got to shut them up when they're going to try to talk over you.
Right. Now, how is that going to sound to people whose sons were lost in Vietnam after the war had been given up on by the political class?
Those are legitimate questions.
They are very legitimate
they
questions.
They are, but Bill
it's nice of you to say so, but that's I haven't got my trousers off yet. Excuse me.
Is that a British term that I'm not familiar with?
I know. Not, as I was saying to Mr. Prager, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm grateful for him for telling me what I already know, that these are legitimate questions. In 1968, there was a peace agreement being made in Paris by Lyndon Johnson and the U.S. government, the elected government, to begin an orderly withdrawal from what was obviously a fiasco, if not a crime, in Vietnam. The Nixon campaign went to the South Vietnamese military leadership and said, if you sabotage those talks and pull out of them and wreck the 1968 elections, sabotage, undermine them, which is what actually happened, then we'll give you a better deal. We'll continue the war on your terms for 4 more years. Look at the Kerry stuff. Look at the time. Look at the place. The time is 69. The war is being extended illegally and secretly as a result of a secret deal involving Nixon and Kissinger.
What do you mean by illegally?
I'm so glad you asked.
Wait, before you answer that, I just want to interject so people don't think I'm asleep.
Or a potted plant.
Just to answer
Ms. Goldberg is not a potted plant.
No, I'm not.
She's not.
Not now. To answer what I think was your question, with my opinion, is no, we knew before we went in that this war was unwinnable. The French had been there forever.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that we went in was because we did so miserably in the Korean War that we needed to sort of bring ourselves back up to what America was supposed to be championing. And instead of paying attention, they went in and wasted lives. I got family on the wall. These are wasted lives.
Wait a second. Sometimes wasted lives are unwasted lives. In Korea, they fought a battle called Hill 53. When it was over,
insane.
It had no strategic value. Why did we fight it? And the guy said, that's the point. It had no strategic value. We had to show them.
That's the point.
We were willing to do that. The Russians lost 20.
Let's let him like finish this slimy thing, because I'm sure we have a lot of react. Let's let him slime for a second.
20 million
Okay. I mean, it is like the highest level of arrogance, again, to treat human life and human destruction as something that just has like poetic value. And it shows something about Bill Maher that always has driven me insane, is that he is somebody who's very detached. Not only he doesn't understand how much, you know, a gallon of milk costs, all that kind of shit. Like, this is somebody who's like very detached from like the real suffering that people go through. And like the real pain that warfare causes, not only to, you know, Americans, but most importantly to the people, you know, who were doing these horrors to. The Korean War is one of the most, you know, it's very important to oppose the Vietnam War, don't get me wrong. But the Korean War was exceptionally wicked and evil. And I think, unfortunately, we haven't even had like a proper reckoning in this country with how damaging and unjust that war was in the first place. Right. So, I mean, like, to even say like, well, this is like just like the Korean War, like we were, you know, trying to occupy random hills to make a point that we won't back down. To think that that's like an argument for why we should be there, for be doing anything in those countries, truly despicable. It reminds me of what LBJ did. I don't know if you know this story, but LBJ was asked by a staffer why we were in Vietnam, and he pulled off his trousers and he put his nuts on the desk in the Oval Office. And he said, "This is why," right? And like that just shows truly how cheap life is to that kind of political class. And it's even more despicable, I think, to be outside of it and just to be a pundit, someone who just talks for a living. You know, you don't benefit necessarily from defending this kind of evil and to do that.
It's also interesting to me the level at which right-wing propaganda operates, which is logic stripped of any sort of like actual grounding in history or facts, right? So you're going to see something about how Prager equates fascism with communism a little bit later. But you notice the people that are jumping in with actual like specific facts, like Ben Shapiro, is Hitchens when he comes in with the 1968 McNamara thing, which again nobody can fucking step to, right? Like, what are you going to say about that? And Whoopi mentioning the previous French involvement, and Hitchens coming in with the Japanese thing, right? And like, it's so clear the depth versus like these shitheads. They just want to. I don't know. They're just propagandists.
They wanted to see their team win on the TV. That's exactly the only argument that we've gotten. It's like, I wanted to see like my team win.
Yeah.
And yeah. And it's completely, again, like abstract.
And the stakes
like
are what death.
That winning entails.
You have somebody whose fucking brother died in the conflict. And you say sometimes wasted lives aren't unwasted lives. That's a literal thing you say on TV. And that's like the dominant position. That like it's 3-on-2. That's the main position.
Yeah.
In Korea, they fought a battle called Hill 53. And when it was over, they said it had no strategic value. Why did we fight it? And the guy said, that's the point. It had no strategic value. We had to show them.
The point,
we
like, were willing. I'm sorry, get off. But just how much of a small brain do you have to be impressed by that, by the way?
I know, bro. Dude, what the fuck?
Wow, dude. That's exactly why we did it, because it was meaningless. Yeah.
Willing to do that. The Russians lost 20 million people in World War II.
Unless you have a damn good reason to be somewhere, don't ask my. Excuse me, let me finish my point. Don't ask my brother to go and do it.
Absolutely.
Don't ask my brother to go and fight unless you can explain to
me.
Was very, very clear about what went on. Yeah. And basically, Mr. McNamara said, look, we knew it was over. And we did nothing about it. That's wasted lives to me. Okay. That's
why is it not a damn good reason? Why is why is fighting communism not a damn good reason? Fighting Nazism was a damn good reason to sacrifice your brothers. Why was fighting communism morally different?
I'll tell you, because to me, I'm not sure that communism is necessarily a bad thing.
Come on.
Well, hold on. I think.
Hell yeah, Whoopi.
That's a remarkable statement.
Well, it shouldn't be, because if you look at.
They have murdered more people than
the Nazis. If you look at the bottom line of what communism is. It is you and I working together for a
better. That's the theory.
That's what I'm saying.
That's not what we were fighting.
How do we know what we were fighting?
Because
Bill?
We knew
how
what
we
went.
Know?
Oh, come on.
Bill, when did we get into World War II? Did we get in when we knew the Jews were being eaten up by?
You can
when
say
we
the
knew
F word.
That the Jews were beaten up by Adolf Hitler? No. It took us years to go in. We knew what the hell was going on. Well, why did it take so long? I mean, I'm not sure that I agree, because Joe McCarthy, was he fighting communism? What was he doing?
Wait. Yes, yeah, we are.
Talking about communism.
Joe McCarthy was a demagogue. That has nothing to do with the idea of fighting communism,
but you know what?
Which is as noble as fighting fascism.
I don't want to disown you or disagree with you, but think I would add this to. Because what you said before shouldn't be forgotten. You're quite right. If your family has names on that wall, you're entitled to say you were lied to about it, and they were not just wasted, but I think they were murdered by the state. I don't think.
Hell yeah.
It's the least you can say.
I mean, it's,
but wait. Now, you look it up, and you won't believe it, but the government of the day, Mr. Dean Rusk, Mr. McNamara, said, we are in Vietnam to stop the Chinese communists from taking over Indochina. Right? That's what they actually said. You don't disagree, I'm pleased to see. What did Mr. Nixon and Mr. Kissinger do? They flew to Beijing to have a photo op with a love-in with Mao Zedong. as their way out of the war. I'm not going to hear from these people that they were anti-communists or anti-Stalinists.
But Mao Zedong, there's another guy who killed millions and millions of people. You speak as if we live in a world that is a vacuum. You have to counteract the worst people. People in the world.
Well, were they doing
the point.
That? Were they doing
that's
that?
My bill. That's I tell you, Bill, I have lived to agree with problems. You.
It's, right. It's I mean, it's just reality.
Not a surprise.
That is not yet. Not surprising at all, friends.
What would you have done? Here's the question.
Yeah.
Let's say Dean Rusk is bad. Casper Weinberg is talking out of his. But everybody's talking different things. You can't get involved in the details. All here's the question.
Why?
I beg your pardon?
I think the details matter, actually.
Yeah, but the overall idea
they
is
they said they were fighting Mao Zedong, and then they went through their arms.
Sorry,
so let's say they're not, yeah. And let's say what it's all about.
I love – Gene Simmons is actually, like, somehow – an amazing representation of an everyday liberal in this. Like he's really playing the role well because the things he say he's not as fluent in political debate as like Prager or Marr to know not to go down this sort of line, right? Like,
yeah, that's
like,
true.
Right? Like just say things like, who cares about the details? Let's just like that's too folksy, bro. But that's like kind of like how people operate, unfortunately.
I know, and it's like, yeah, it's too much of a slam dunk to say, like, no, I actually think the details do matter when we're talking about invading other countries.
They were fighting Mao Zedong, then they went through their arms around.
So let's say they're not, and let's say what it's all about is oil, okay? And let's...
Not in Indochina, it is.
Okay, so it's about some other idea. It's not about politics.
Is oil not like, I don't know.
Well, this, so I think I was thinking about this earlier and it's like, this is weird to have right before, you know, our wars in the Middle East. But what I think was, there's a lot of peak oil, you know, concern going on at this time that I think actually sort of snowballed when the wars happened and sort of maybe reduced people's interpretations of why we were into Iraq to just that, because this sort of narrative was already out there.
Oh yeah, I mean that was Gulf War too.
Yeah, you're right.
At the end of the day, if we weren't going to step up and do something physically there, I ask all of us, I'm neither Democrat or Republican, I have issues with both those guys. I think everybody's
very noble of you.
So the question for all of us is,
the good thing about being neither Democrat or Republican is that they both agreed on one thing, which was extending the fucking murderous imperialist war in Vietnam, right?
Right.
Yeah. Bipartisan issue, friend.
If not there, where? That's the question for you.
Okay, I got to take a break. This is interesting, but I have to take a commercial.
We can't.
Right.
We're not going to leave Vietnam like that, are we?
What's that?
We're not going to leave Vietnam just like that, are we?
We're not going to leave Vietnam? No, that was our original problem. We couldn't leave Vietnam. You want to stay?
Hey-o. No, I have an entry strategy.
An entry strategy?
A term I hope you don't borrow from me. No, he challenged me, and I should say.
I was challenging. I was just asking.
Said, what should and should not be done against communists? Well, Nelson Mandela was arrested on information given to the South African police. By the American Central Intelligence Agency because they were fighting communism. Are you for that? Is anything done against communism okay with you? Would be my question.
Listen, the war in Vietnam was a war fought by the Vietnamese.
Wait, I just have to say, as having seen a few Dennis Prager videos, it is so great to just turn him into like a mumbling idiot by just talking over him.
Over
like,
him.
Whenever he starts doing the greatest mass murderous system in the history of the world, it's like, just keep going. You
yes,
know, like
exactly.
Not allowing yourself to get derailed.
Absolutely. It's so satisfying.
And it's against the Japanese, against the French. And the United States government made the hideous mistake by lying repeatedly to its own people of inheriting that terrible war, and they threw away the lives of many, many Americans. They undermined American democracy, and they killed probably 3 million Vietnamese for nothing at all. And Bob Kerry is being asked.
But it wasn't
Bob
for
Kerry
nothing at all.
Asked,
no,
Bob
that's
Kerry,
what you're wrong.
Bob Kerry was ordered to kill those people.
What was it for?
It was so that Reagan could stand there and say, tear down this wall. And at that point, the Russians could go, you know what? The Americans have proved to us that they are willing to stand up to the bully. If we had not fought Vietnam, Reagan couldn't have had his photo op, and this Cold War would never have ended.
And who's the bully in the village? Who's the bully in the village when Bob Kerry and his friends shoot 13 civilians?
No one is.
Who's the bully there? Under orders, because it's a free fire zone, and you can kill anyone.
Of course, when you play the women and children,
exactly. What about the women and children?
That's Bill fucking Maher. That's Bill Maher encapsulated. Play the women and children card. Again, putting some basic level humanity on the people that the United States is engaging in war crimes against. I mean, that's it right there to me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, at this point, you're not debating with somebody. This is somebody who is mad at you for like bringing some kind of question to morality into war in a foreign country around the world.
I mean, look at what like Zippo squads were, right? Like this story, I can't remember which book it is. I wish I did. I'll try to do better, but, and it was, they could see, smoke, in like plumes of smoke from the villages they had just burned behind them. And that's the sort of thing like, people should add to, and that was under orders, and that caused a lot of the PTSD that people had to deal with, and like the things that they couldn't talk about. It wasn't just the things done to them. It was the things that they were ordered to do to people.
Absolutely.
In Dresden who were killed by Allied bombers. There were far more German civilians killed.
Do not profane. Do not profane the struggle against Nazism. Like, do not profane it, I repeat, by comparing it to the action of someone who acts like a Nazi and rounds up civilians and kills
them. Stalin killed as many Jews since I'm one as Hitler did. You know, I make no distinction between Stalin and Hitler.
But here's the thing. Here's the about the whole thing. When you send people to war, when you make young men soldiers, these are ordinary cats coming out of neighborhoods, coming out of nice suburbs, and they're put into extraordinary situations. I'm afraid that I feel that Bob Kerry probably did what countless people did in Vietnam, probably panicked and killed a whole lot of people.
But Whoopi, it's not fair to say
they were under orders.
It hasn't been tried. We don't know.
But we know they were under orders to kill anyone who moved in that area.
Gene Simmons certainly doesn't know. So if we don't know yet, you certainly
yeah,
do
let's
not
all shut
know,
up and blah, blah. Listen to fucking I Want to Rock and Roll All Night guy.
Describe the U.S. government
because anyone who moved in that area could well have been an enemy. It was a tragic war.
Wait, I have a question for you.
Have you moved to Free Plaza?
Let me ask you. What, there is evil in the world, you would agree?
Yeah.
There is evil and evil men?
Yeah.
Yes, Henry Kissinger. I've written a book about it.
Okay.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
Yeah. Right. How do you counteract evil? How do you stop evil if not with greater force?
Cuff Kissinger, take him downtown. Could you? That would be a stop.
Miss Goldberg, answer this question.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry, Bill. Will you please repeat the question?
I love you, Kissinger. I pissed you,
it's funny what gets applause.
If there is evil in the world,
yes,
naturally nobody wants to send their sons to go and fight it. But how else do you counteract evil? How else do you stop
it? Whose evil are we talking about, Bill?
Well, the communist empire was evil, and it was bent on world domination.
The communist empire. Like that's throwback.
I don't think so. The countries that we liberated became democracies.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Oh, man. We had base Whoopi for like 15 seconds, and then I think she walks it back. But she's actually base right here, and I think this is what she does think. Let's watch this again.
Yeah, yeah.
Act evil. How else do you stop
it? Whose evil are we talking about, Bill?
Well, the communist empire was evil, and it was bent on world domination. And at a certain point...
Not like us.
Not in Indochina.
No, I don't think so. The countries that we liberated became democracies.
But I'm not saying it's a bad... Listen, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I only pose the question. We also would like to run the world as the United States.
What country does everybody try to sneak across the border to?
But you're missing...
Stop.
He is
so worked up, and I love it. That's my only comment. Whoopi, come on.
Yeah. I mean, and like, let's not forget, as you noted earlier, and you know, very shortly after this, the United States is about to enter into a forever war.
Right.
One that has only just recently ended, right? They're acting as if like the United States does not have ambitions to control the global system. I mean, you know, this isn't a whole episode on the Soviet Union, but boy, I'll tell you one thing. When it comes down to foreign policy, there's one system that was way more damaging and way more evil than the Soviet Union. It was the United States. I mean, the Soviet Union was like on the side of like, you know, powers that were fighting against colonialism. And it wasn't always, you know, phenomenal, and certainly within its own bloc. You know, it had issues, no doubt about that. But I mean, I'm just sorry, like to compare it to America is almost laughable at this point.
Yeah. So it's my point, you know, every
where are you going to run if you're being carpet bombed? Where are you going to run if you're being carpet bombed?
But what is carpet bombing have to do with carpet bombing? Right now, no one is being carpet bombed.
There were no refugees. But if you lived,
there were no people refugees from carpet bombing. You can't escape it.
Okay,
you escape
the
regime.
They were both people.
Escape, you can't escape mass murder from the air. And if anything you say is true, ask yourself this. Why, if this is anything you say is true, is Henry Kissinger now taking money from the Chinese communists to defend their right to shoot their students?
What are we talking about?
Why is that?
Henry Kissinger is your biggest bet noir.
Are you going to take that? Are you going to take that from Kissinger?
What do you think it was like to live under a communist regime before communism came to an end?
I'll tell you in part what it was like because I lived in East Germany.
You lived in East Germany?
Yes, I did.
Whoa.
And so when I say
there you go, Hitchens got the scotch
going. Things I say, it comes from a different place. Do I think that communism, as it's worked by men, works? No. Do I think that democracy often works in certain societies? No, we're seeing Russia implode. Because it's not working. We haven't given it enough time.
Because it's not democracy.
Well, but they think it is, and we...
By the way, you know, what's going on in Russia at this period of time? Other than just extreme American sabotage, because they were afraid after the fall of the Soviet Union that the people would democratically elect the Communist Party back into power. So the United States rigged the elections and supported a complete incompetent drunk to drive the country not only into economic crisis, but into a mass fire sale in the hands of a few families to basically do a round of like primitive accumulation to control all of the industries in society and create one of the more unequal countries in Europe, right? I mean, it's just like,
yeah,
it's amazing to rail about democracy, I don't know.
He said it is, and now it's altering. You know, there are changes happening in Cuba, which everyone is happy for, but we're still smoking our Cuban cigars, are
Wait,
we not?
What year did you live in East Germany?
I lived in East Germany in 1979, then 1980, 1981, and we snuck in.
And what was that like for a sister?
It was very, very interesting because it was all artists. We were living with artists. And so they would talk to me and say, listen, can you bring the next time you come, can you bring this, 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 and this?
Yeah,
and when we came in next year, we brought what we could and we hung out and we did theater. We did theater with these East German artists who are, you know, trying to figure out, as youth always does, because they're the children of the people who got chopped off in the center.
But did you not find yourself to be in a suffocating society where people were spied upon, where people did not have freedom, where people lived in a gray, morbid world?
Bill, let me tell you something about
not
how
free.
It works.
People spied on?
If you've never known anything else, which a lot of the kids that we were working with did because we were young, then it seems perfectly normal.
Would you say about slavery?
Would I say what about if it was
you
perfect?
Know pardon? Else but slavery.
If you worked, if what it.
Would you, how do you defend the system?
I want to dust the tape. Also, what fucking cojones on this little man right here to compare the East Germans? I mean, you know, and people should know that when we see what happened after reunification in East Germany, I mean, it's a nightmare. When you look at like all social kind of metrics to what happened when they introduced capitalism on a mass scale into East Germany, it's a part of the country that still has not recovered in the same way that like Western Germany did, because introducing capitalism into a system that had been socialist for so long created just mass inequity. Anyways, let's see how Dennis Prager sort of slithers this one.
I forgot that he did this.
Because people didn't know something better.
Well, then how do you defend it?
Because, first of all, we do know something better.
Because there is a higher good, whether you know it exists or not.
Yes, but if you don't know, then your life, your everyday life.
But they did know. They did know. They had TV. They did know.
No, I'm talking about.
That's why there was a wall built so people wouldn't leave.
She was very
young. I can't answer because I have five guys asking me a question. Your question was, how was it? I say, for me, it was interesting because these guys did not act as though they were repressed and oppressed. They did not move on an everyday level that way. And when you ask me about slavery and would I defend slavery, you know, in 1955 in Montgomery, Alabama, I made a movie recently, last couple of years, called Long Walk Home. And when I went to make this movie, my attitude was, if I had been here then, those people wouldn't have done this to me because I would have stood up and told them. You know, these ladies who walked those 6 miles that way and 6 miles that way said to me, you know what, we couldn't have done that because they would have come in the house and hung the kids.
Right.
So
right.
We did it differently. We did it this way. People fight it differently. So when you ask me about the oppression, and was it? No, it wasn't. The way people were fighting what they didn't like in East Germany was through art.
Okay. I got to make a little money for capitalism right now.
Can I ask the audience a question? I'm just, this is totally nothing to do with Vietnam, and I'm very curious. Yeah. Would you just applaud if you believe that you're being hurt by secondhand smoke now?
Honestly, most cuck shit ever.
Yeah.
I give up.
Isn't that great?
You're not just wrong, you're stupid. Yeah. Okay, can I just tell you that?
And none of them have... And there's 1,000 noxious fumes in the air in America. So America causes cancer.
None of them
cancer.
Have to stay, and if they don't care for it, they can...
Right, it's so easy to pick out the one and evil, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have many evils. I also smoke.
Right. This is sort of analogous to Vietnam.
Yeah,
okay, so what's the issue on the table, Uncle Tom?
I have the issue. The issue
on the
table
is major.
All right. Yeah, I
think that's right. Non-conclusion there.
Man, I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's an interesting call. I mean, you wish you had a better moderator there for sure. I wish Hitchens wasn't such a coward towards the end when it does come to sort of correcting the record a little bit. You don't have to go full-on apologist or anything like that for any of those systems, but it is pretty incredible to see his silence on sort of correcting the record against somebody as noxious and as absurd as Dennis Prager. I mean, the closest that Hitchens ever gets is when he says, do not profane the struggle against fascism by comparing it to carpet bombing, you know, Vietnamese villagers. I think that that's going back to like the title of Ben's book, it's like, you know, where Hitchens is good and where he was wrong. I think that's definitely a place where he was always very lacking in that.
Younger Hitchens probably would have stood up for it more, I think, though, wouldn't you think?
I mean, I think potentially, you know, guys like that, I have to say, sometimes have a hard time figuring out where they want to win. Cause like, you got to remember that Hitchens was a Trot too. So Hitchens' entire, like, I don't know, interaction with the communist and socialist movement was one of, like, criticism. I don't know. So, like, I don't think that he felt any reason or need to sort of defend these things from the right, which I think is disappointing, where you sort of see a bit of laziness. Because you can't talk about, like, the history of the 20th century in the terms that Hitchens does without trying to take a serious accounting of, like, the struggle of socialists versus, you know, colonialism and capitalism. And I think Hitchens unfortunately sits that one out, except in situations where the jury sort of been decided, right? Like, he's happy to talk nice about Trotsky and the fight against Nazism. But after that, you know, Hitchens was not a big supporter of like Cuba, for example.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting, and that it makes sense as sort of like the where Hitchens, he never developed fully along those lines.
Well, that's what like Coburn's criticisms of him were too, and a lot of other like socialists, was that, you know, he makes this presentation as if he's speaking from the Fourth or the Fifth International, right? He's like a delegate coming into the United States to speak truth. This is somebody who, for the most part, was pretty far away from these movements outside of the kind of like intellectual scene. You can read pieces of Hitchens in the New Left Review, for example, right. But very rarely is it anything sort of amounting to. I mean, actually, like sorry, I don't mean to end on a sour note, but it's just like, this is the kind of thing that rewatching old Hitchens always sort of strikes me more than I think when I first got into him, is that while he can sort of paint himself in like the grand kind of international tradition of like socialism sort of fighting against imperialism and like Nazism, when it comes to the kind of domestic tenets of socialism, he becomes a lot more sheepish and quiet. You know what I mean? Like breaking the power of capitalists over, you know, society. And he's very happy to talk about American war criminals. But, you know, not so much the financiers and like the big bourgeoisie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and he could occasionally do that. He had a, late in life, an essay on the bailout called like America Banana Republic or something like that. So, and if I remember right, he had some really good righteous anger along those lines there. But yeah, you can see like, I mean, dude is comparing fucking American slavery, the plantation system.
Germany, absurd. Yeah. Just absurd.
It's ludicrous.
I mean, you know, before we went live, we were sort of talking about this. Before we get to, maybe that'll be the last thing we would bring up, but like, I think it's a really interesting debate for sure. I think Whoopi is fascinating. And I think that she hits some base points. I think Gene Simmons, I think you're right, is like a stand in for like a bullshit liberal. Marr sort of is like, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, if like, if it wasn't the Bush years, Marr would have been a Republican, frankly. You know, it's just like, oh, you don't like evangelical Christians.
I made a note, like, how fucking dare you go on like 5 years later about how other people are too fucking fundamentalist, that you are telling people that sometimes wasted lives are worth being wasted because we need to send a fucking message. Like, that is unbelievable.
Frankly, that's a much more dangerous fundamentalism than any kind of religious based one in our era, I have to say.
Absolutely.
Damaging. But the last thing, I mean, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we went live, but this is an interesting debate because I do feel like the communism spectrum might be starting to come back, sort of thrown around again. And I wonder if we're prepared for it on a national discourse, because the right is certainly really leaning into that again, as like these kind of movements for, you know, social justice, you know, start to, you know, gain a little bit more ground. I don't think we're anywhere near where people want to be, but, you know, as we start to see communities being much more inclusive and things like that, you do see the right sort of returning to you know, communism as a threat, right? Rhetorically. And I wonder,
I just want to say, like, it's basically because, oh, we're seeing that acceptance of like trans people or.
It has little to do with, yeah.
And now they're just like, well, if you like trans people, that means you also like Marx. So maybe you should reconsider what you think about trans people, that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's certainly, you know, not material in any way. But I just wonder if that's going to be as deep of a well as they're sort of hoping that is the right. I mean, and two, what's going to happen with left liberals and liberals in general as that starts to be trotted out again? Because I think that there has been some kind of a shift on the term socialist and socialism, but it has been defined as like anti-communism or distinct from the communist tradition, right? Marx and Lenin. So I don't know. I'm just wondering if you know, we might need to be brushing ourselves up on some of these older arguments, because they might have a lot more play in the next
year. Yeah, I think so. I mean, one thing I think that makes full-on just red-baiting more difficult for the right than misogyny or racism is it cuts their audience more, right? Like, they attack black people or women. Their audience is only like 10% that anyway. But that's why they avoid like issues of working class stuff. Because like, if you start like saying, hey, we actually... if your propaganda is on the lines of like these moochers well, that's actually like, there's a lot of people that are like, hey, I actually could use some fucking healthcare, or I could use like my rent is way too fucking high, and you're telling me that I need to kiss a developer's ass, right? Like, like that, like part of me is, a part of me welcomes them trying to fight on those grounds, because like I said, like, I think it's just not, I think it's more dangerous for them than just old fashioned misogyny and racism.
I think that makes sense. I mean, like, anything that can sort of put those terms in, like, I mean, the terms of like actually like being able to talk about what socialism is, you know, publicly, I actually think is pretty helpful, even if it can sort of suck a lot of oxygen out of the room at first. Yeah, making, you know, sort of making a distinction between what Bill Maher, like, it's so amazing too, like the tropes about what communism was, is like a gray world where everybody's just standing around with their heads down, you know. It's like, no, I mean, like, Whoopi was going there because it was a vibrant place. It was a place
doing to think art,
and a place to create and to make art. I mean, some of the great like achievements of like humanity, you know.
And he asked, like, how was that as a sister? And it's like, fucking probably better than lots of parts of America.
Well, you know, like, the famous quote, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, for sure. I mean, you know, again, people forget, but like, you know, Stalin threatened to send the Red Army into Mississippi at the height of Jim Crow. You know,
that's just so fucking hilarious.
For a long time, the American Communist Party actually had a. It wasn't at first, but later on, you know, of what was it, the Black Belt, that they should separate, you know, parts of the Deep South, or have highly concentrated, you know, African American communities, you know, to be a separate nation. For a while, I mean, that was a big part of it. And in fact, Lenin too was actually very early on making the argument that like Black workers sort of occupy a special category in the United States of like having a lot to gain from breaking and smashing the system of capitalism, right? So, you know, I'm just saying, like, the nastiness of Bill Maher to act like East Germany more racist than, you know, the country that built on, you know, American slavery is
plantation system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a system that still has effects today right, that you can see.
Yeah. I mean, literally you could draw a reductive line from Thomas Jefferson to suburban sprawl. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's those nice people in Berlin. Yeah. Well, anyways, I think we'll probably have to do some more Hitchens conversations. I'm really looking forward to reading Ben's book. I think it comes out in January. Yeah. So next week, we're not doing a full show, but we'll be releasing a conversation with Lillian Chichurchia, host, one of the co-hosts of What's Left of Philosophy Pod. She's going to be talking to us about whether or not Marxism is economic determinism. Really looking forward to that. And then we'll see you all the week after Thanksgiving. I hope everybody has a nice, I hope you're able to take a little bit of a break for yourself, and we'll see you on the other side.
See you, folks.